So good evening, everyone. Today was really quite wonderful, wasn't it? This afternoon. I would love to hear from you about how it actually was at some point. Maybe we can chat. But just assuming that there was something perhaps that touched you, that maybe made you feel a little bit more like you belong. Millions of people experienced the eclipse today, and that impressed me that so many people were interested in it. Yeah. So many people wanted an experience that was out of their usual experience. Maybe that made one feel that there was something bigger than the sense of separation that maybe oftentimes is just lived with. These kinds of events, they inspire a kind of awe, a kind of wonder. Perhaps sensing, and not to make it more than what it is, but for some, sensing a kind of universal connectedness. It seems to be quite true that these days, oftentimes, although technology maybe was initially designed to connect, that it oftentimes has the opposite effect, and it disconnects, it separates. I hope you're still really enjoying not having your cell phone. It kind of kicks in around now that, you know, after the initial day or two of addiction and agitation and, you know, where is it? It kicks in that it's quite a wonderful thing to not have it, not have to be checking it and all of that stimuli coming your way. The peace of that, the relief of that. And so hopefully millions of people had a little bit of that experience today. Amidst the noise and the divisiveness and the conflicts and the inner and outer incessant chatter, something got really quiet this afternoon. Did you sense that? Yeah. Something got really, really quiet, and it wasn't just humans. This was an experience that was inclusive. Inclusive of many different life forms, this sense of quiet, of silence. And in that quietness, perhaps more of a sense of unity, the collective experience of being alive in this mysterious life. Scientists say that astronauts have a similar experience when they're in space, looking back and seeing the Earth, a brief glimpse into the reality that everything is whole and not fragmented. Oftentimes, astronauts do say that it was something spiritual that they experienced, yeah. So something similar to that, perhaps, today. And it was an experience. So when you go home, and if someone says, well, I saw the totality and you only saw the partial, you do not have to feel that you missed a thing. Please do not, because you did not. We are on a path, as I said this morning, of totality, recognizing perhaps what might be called an inner eclipse, which is a process rather than an event, which means present, now, Many of you know I love Thich Nhat Hanh's little way of saying this, in the here, in the here, in the now, in the now. I have to restrain myself these days from saying it too much. In the here, in the here, in the now, in the now. A total eclipse is a reminder of the magic in being alive, but the magic is actually available to us always if we are here and now. We are on a path of totality rather than a path of fragmentation. A path of fragmentation is a path of disconnection. And a path of totality is a path of deep joy. So that's what I want to talk about tonight, continuing with the Brahmaviharas, the divine abodes, where we can live and not just visit every once in a while. Brahma, divine, lovely, beautiful, heavenly. Abode, home, home, vihara, home. So where we can actually find our true home. Metta, boundless benevolence, compassion, and tonight, joy. In the time of the Buddha, someone asked the Buddha, "Why are your devotees so radiant?" And it kind of gives us a little bit of insight just to listen in on that question. You know, we're getting the sense, the idea that in the Buddha's time, the Buddha's disciples were actually radiant. And so that's good information to have. So why are your devotees so radiant? And the Buddha responded, "They do not lament over the past. They do not hanker for things in the future. They maintain themselves on whatever comes. Therefore, they are serene." They maintain themselves on whatever comes, which means whatever comes here and now. Therefore, they are joyful. They are radiant. They are serene. Also, in the Buddha's time, there's a story that I'd like to read to you. At the time of the Buddha, there lived a woman called Relying on Joy. That was her name. Instead of Joyce or Sally, her name was Relying on Joy. She used to watch the kings, princes, and people making offerings to the Buddha and his disciples, and there was nothing she would have liked more than to be able to do the same. But she only had enough oil to fill a single lamp. As she was with the Buddha, she made this wish. "I have nothing to offer but this tiny lamp. But through this offering, may I be blessed with the lamp of wisdom. May I free all beings. May I purify all their obscurations and lead them to awakening." She had really high aspirations there. I love it. That night, the oil in all the other lamps went out. But this woman's lamp was still burning at dawn. When the Buddha's disciple, Maud Gulyana, came to collect the lamps, he didn't see a reason why one lamp was still alight, and he tried to snuff it out. But whatever he did, however way he tried to put this light out, the lamp kept burning. The Buddha had been watching all along, and he said, "Maud Gulyana, do you want to put out that lamp?" "You cannot. You could not ever move it, let alone put it out. If you were to pour the water from all oceans over this lamp, it still wouldn't go out. The water in all the rivers and lakes of the world could not extinguish it. Why not? Because this lamp was offered with devotion and with beauty of heart and mind. And that motivation has made it of tremendous benefit. Relying on joy. Can we rely on joy? This is the power of devotion and our devotion, our dedication, our resolve in terms of walking a noble path, walking a path of dignity, of integrity, of beauty, of wisdom, of compassion, of awakening. This is a path of dedication, of devotion. The Buddha said, when we appreciate fully the benefit of our own wholesome deeds, we are filled with joy. There is a celebration of joy. There is a celebration of joy. Oftentimes, we focus on what we've done wrong and what we have done that has been fragmented or unwholesome. What we need to fix or change, and then maybe we'll deserve to be joyful and light and weightless. The Buddha is saying, be aware of your wholesome actions. Be aware of your beautiful ways of speaking. Be aware of the ways that you think that are lovely and to be appreciated and enjoyed and loved. It's not the easiest thing to pull off because of conditioning, glomming onto that which has not worked and is not working. And of course, we have to see these kinds of things and not to neglect appreciation for how we have acted in ways that really do have integrity in them, that really are offerings to the beautiful in this world. This is what is called the sweet joy of the way. There's something very, very sweet about it, being on this path. And it's something that can bring about joy within the heart. It's just the recognition of being on the path and doing our best. And not always judging that our best is not good enough. Getting behind our own sincerity. And in this sincerity, recognizing that we really are doing our best without always second-guessing ourselves. Could have been better. Okay, it was pretty good. But could have been better. Was what it was. Is what it is. This is a cause for joy. It's a cause for appreciation. We can know joy within our hearts when we connect our joys to the joys of others. Instead of the shared cultural belief that if one person is joyful, then there won't be enough for me, this culture of deprivation based on economics. You know, we've been sold a bill of goods here. It's not true. There is plenty of joy to go around. There is actually immeasurable joy to go around. So connecting and responding to the joy of others just brings about greater joy. It's not easy in the culture that we live in. It's not easy at all. It's challenging territory at times because of this culture of comparing and competing. One really needs to practice being present, being now, and engaging the body in this endeavor so that we are taking up the space that we are. You know, when we are willing to be in our own bodies and not jump into somebody else's body and then use their body as a way of looking back at ourselves with judgmental eyes, this is something that is so harsh and does not at all lead to greater joy. So if you see this in yourself, the competing and the comparing, please see it without shame, because it is a cultural conditioning. And yet, is it possible to move from that place and not suffer collectively because of this collective conditioning? Is it possible to actually encourage appreciation and joy when somebody is doing really well, when somebody has a lot of joy? Can we actually stop and pause, and instead of immediately contracting around the conditioning of comparing and competing, can we soften and open and relax and move into perhaps the painful feelings that are present, but not to stop there. Not to stop there. Relying on joy. Remembering that this can be each one of our names, not just someone in the Buddhist time. Maybe you'll leave here and you'll rename yourself. Relying on joy. You leave a retreat and someone says, how was your retreat? Well, you know, I changed my name. I am now relying on joy. We'll see what happens with this one. We do need to feel full enough within. We do need to feel nourished within to be able to truly, deeply appreciate the joys of others. And I want to read to you something by Mary Standing Otter. It's called Someone. And really, I want to encourage you to take this in, receive it, and let it go into your very being, into your bones. Someone. Right now, there are Tibetan Buddhist monks in a temple in the Himalayas, endlessly reciting mantras for the cessation of your suffering and for the flourishing of your happiness. Someone you haven't met yet is already dreaming of adoring you. Someone is writing a book that you will read in the next 2 years that will change how you look at life. Nuns in the Alps are in endless vigil, praying for the Holy Spirit to light up the hearts of all of God's children. A farmer is looking at his organic crops and whispering, "Nourish them." Someone wants to kiss you, to hold you, to make tea for you. Someone is willing to lend you money, wants to know what your favorite food is, and treat you to a movie. Someone in your orbit has something immensely valuable to give you for free. Something is being invented this year that will change how your generation lives, communicates, heals, and passes on. The next great song is being rehearsed. Thousands of people are in yoga classes right now, intentionally sending light out from their heart chakras and wrapping it around the earth. millions of children are assuming that everything is amazing and will always be that way. Someone is in profound pain, and a few months from now, they'll be thriving like never before. From where they are, they just can't see it. Someone who is craving to be partnered, to be acknowledged, to arrive, will get precisely what they want, and even more. And because that gift will be so fantastical in its reach and sweetness, it will quite magically alter their memory of longing and render it all so worth the wait. Someone wrote me today with this very situation. Someone has recently cracked open their joyous, genuine nature because they did the hard work of hauling years of oppression off of their psyche. This luminous jutsu is floating in the ether and is accessible to you. Someone just this second wished for world peace in earnest. Some civil servant is making sure that you get your mail and your garbage is picked up, that the trains are running on time, and that you are generally safe. Someone is dedicating their days to protecting your civil liberties and clean drinking water. Someone is regaining their sanity. Someone is coming back from the dead. Someone is genuinely forgiving the seemingly unforgivable. Someone is curing the incurable. You, me, some, one, now. Now, you might not completely believe all of this, but hopefully you can connect with some of it. There are different kinds of joy that we want to be aware of. There is conditioned joy, joy because of. And there is joy in spite of. There is unconditioned joy that is not dependent on conditions. Conditioned joy is because of a this or a that. And because of the this or the that, the beautiful heart space of gratitude naturally, organically, can be encouraged to arise. Awareness of even small reasons why we might be grateful. One of my sisters today asked for my help. She has a hard time asking for my help. And I am grateful. I am really happy, and I am really grateful. Gratitude, joy, and sorrow are oftentimes intermingled, as we know. In my family right now, I have one death that is imminent, may happen any time now. One dear, dear being in my family. And I also have a niece that is pregnant after having wanted to be pregnant for years and years and years. And I also have another niece who's getting married and very joyful about both of them. And of course, very sad with this imminent death. Adrift by Mark Napo. Everything is beautiful, and I am so sad. This is how the heart makes a duet of wonder and grief. The light spraying through the lace of the fern is as delicate as the fibers of memory forming their web around the knot in my throat. The breeze makes the bird move from branch to branch. As this ache makes me look for those I've lost in the next room, in the next song, in the laugh of the next stranger. In their very center, under it all, what we have that no one can take away, and all we've lost, face each other. It is there that I'm adrift, feeling punctured by a holiness that exists inside everything. I am so sad, and everything is beautiful. What we have that no one can take away. This is unconditioned joy, inwardly generated. As wonderful as it is to have lovely conditions in a life, and it is, really the path of Dharma is to have access to this inwardly generated joy, Dharma joy, you could call it. What emerges is a sense of confidence, of trust, even of excitement in realizing that we are more than our habits, that our habits don't own us, that our habits don't need to lay claim to our lives. An incredible joy and lightness when we recognize this. This path, this sweet joy of the way, which, you know, you practice long enough, it's inevitable, so don't feel left out. Once again, you know, don't feel that way, because you kind of can't stop it. You can't say, okay, metta, that sounds reasonable, love, compassion, okay, I get that, you know, I understand that I need to be compassionate. Equanimity, balance. That's possible. Possible, doable. Joy, no. No way. It's too bouncy, you know? It's too much. It's not deep enough. It's not serious. There's a problem with it in some way. Yeah. You can't miss even when you try. Remember the poem? Yeah. Friday night. You can't miss even if you try. I think sometimes this word joy, though, is a little bit problematic for some. And there's so many other words for joy, for Dharma joy. So I want to mention some and just listen to see which one is yours. It's probably so that one of them is going to be yours. And then you never need to use the word joy again if you don't want to. You can use one of the words that really is the one for you. So the word wonder. Maybe today with the eclipse, you didn't feel joy. You know, that didn't make any sense to you, but you felt perhaps some wonder, maybe some awe, maybe a sense of the mystery of things, that there is so much that we don't know, that we can't verbalize, that we can't put words to, that seems to flatten it when we try to put words to the nonverbal. Maybe fullness of heart, perhaps delight or even bliss, maybe contentment or enoughness, perhaps reverence, if that's serious enough for you. Perhaps reverence. One staff member outside got a chair and was leaning back and was there at the beginning, you know, way before anything started to happen. And then I happened to walk by him after, quite a long time after everything had changed. And he was still lying there, but his hands were in the prayer pose. You know, he's just lying there with his hands in the prayer pose, and there was a sense of reverence. The infinite mystery of this life we find ourselves living, as puzzling as it is at times, we could fear that, or we could embrace the fear, boundless benevolence in relationship to the fear, and rest in astonishment, rest in the mystery. Beginner's mind is a mind that knows that everything is new. And actually, you know, beginners on this path have a hard time recognizing beginner's mind. When you've been at this for a while, there is a deeper understanding of what it means to begin anew. That every moment is new, that every moment is fresh. The bamboo master said, "Everything I touch becomes new." We can always begin again. We can always begin again, because in each moment there is a new invitation. Nothing is ever lost. Right here, now, whatever way things have been for you, here now is a new and fresh invitation. And always we're just answering that invitation. We're responding, or we're shutting the door. And I'm not saying that at times one doesn't need to shut the door. But that is what is happening. That is the reality of things. Nothing can ever happen again. It looks like it is. It appears as if it is. It sounds like what it is. It tastes like it has. Because oftentimes it's the same patterns. It's the same content that is happening. But awareness is always new and always fresh. Someone recently told me about their grandchild, little two-year-old, who saw the ocean for the very first time. And she said that she saw him kind of walk to the edge of the ocean and then be completely, completely astonished. Like, you know, he's a little kid and he just puts his arms out. Like, really? You know, this is beyond what my little mind can comprehend. This is expansiveness beyond my imagination. Everything we touch becomes new. We are fortunate to have a path and to have a practice, because we actually have pathways to unconditional joy, wonder, awe, fullness within. The reality of things is mysterious. Our pathways are pretty darn clear. Our practice is pretty clear and straightforward. So, I want to read you something by Maharaj Nisargadatta. He said, "The bliss is in the full awareness of both pleasure and pain, not shrinking or in any way turning away. All happiness comes from awareness. The more we are conscious, the deeper the joy. Acceptance of pleasure, acceptance of pain, non-resistance, courage, and endurance. These open deep and perennial sources of real happiness, true bliss." This is an instruction. This is not something that is poetic. It is poetic, but it is not just poetic. It is, these are straightforward instructions, not always easy to apply or to live or to embody. And that's why it's a practice, because it's not so easy to apply and to live and to embody. But we know what to do. We have a direction, and that direction is allowing and opening and accepting, making space for, making room for the full awareness of both pleasure and pain, not shrinking or in any way turning away. All happiness comes from awareness. Another way, same way, same path, is to relax the grasping. You've heard this before. Relax the grasping. The practice of releasing, letting be, relinquishing, letting go. And this is how we know the joy of the Buddha. We can say that because everything is impermanent, all phenomena is impermanent, all conditions arise and pass away, appear and disappear, are here and then are gone. Where's the joy in that? Might as well hang it up if everything is impermanent. Well, no. If you remember our last chant in the evening, all conditioned things are impermanent. Their nature is to arise and pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings true happiness. To be in alignment with nature, to be in accordance with nature, to be in harmony with nature, this can bring about great joy within the heart. Learn to be still. Learn to be quiet. In this stillness will come the true joy of the Buddha. Letting be, letting go, softening, relaxing is sometimes really hard and really daunting. Other times, it's really joyful. And it's important to recognize the times when it has been joyful and not just latch on to the times when it's been really hard and really daunting. To reflect on these times as well. It's one of those amazing things, I think, that in times of great change, in times of transition, even in times of loss, there can be an unexpected wonder. In relaxing the grasping, in letting go, there is joy in the freedom from clinging. Enjoying without grasping at joyful and pleasurable conditions is counterintuitive. But that's because we see joy as a consumable product. When joy cannot be hoarded and it can't be made into something to buy, it is found within. So let me ask you, and some of you may know this quite clearly, and others of you, maybe when I say it, you know it, and others of you will know it at another point. Have you ever known joy without a reason for it? Have you ever known joy without a reason for it, even when conditions were difficult or really difficult? Yet, here it is, undeniable. Why is this so? Because sometimes we are forced to be present. We are almost forced into the now because the past looks less rosy than it had. less captivating. The future is uncertain and not as compelling, not as enticing. Now is all one has. And there is, can be, moments of surprising, unexpected joy. We are learning how to allow everything to be on its own terms, not according to our own. It puts us in the now. It's the timeless. The taste of nirvana is that of joy. Dharma joy is not denial. It's not a character flaw, meaning that if you are joyful, you are not paying attention. The kind of joy the Buddha taught is the joy that forgets nothing, as Camus put it. The joy that forgets nothing. Not trying to escape or evade the realities of life. Encountering the realities of life with as much buoyancy and steadiness as is possible. But it's joy in the very midst of knowing the sweet joy of the way. Joy, of course, can be resistance. This happened in Iran in 2023, December, and I know things have moved from then, but I still want to offer this to you. A new form of protest against the government is rocking Iran. A viral dance craze set to an upbeat folk song where crowds clap and chant the rhythmic chorus, "Oh, oh, oh, oh." In cities across Iran, men and women of all ages are gyrating their hips, swirling their arms in the air and chanting the song's catchy lines. According to videos posted on social media and those that are being interviewed, people are dancing in the streets. In most countries, dancing and singing in public would not be considered taboo. But in Iran, dancing in public, especially by women and between men and women, is banned. Although the rule is regularly defied, enforcing it has been arbitrary. Music, dancing, and singing are deeply rooted in Iran's culture, and attempts by Islamic clerics to take that away in their 43 years of rule have by and large failed. But seldom has a single song and dance turned into a collective act of civil disobedience. There was a previous uprising led by women that erupted across Iran in 2022 that by and large was crushed with violence. But protests endured in other creative ways, such as the Ashura religious participants' changing of the words of religious ballads to reflect their disdain with the Islamic Republic's rulers and the current dance trend. The government, in this case, retreated. The person who started has close to 1 million followers on his Instagram page and is hailed as a national hero who inadvertently sparked a renewed call for change. This is creativity. I mean, of course, we're talking about a tremendous amount of courage. But look how it got contagious. Joy as resistance. They called it a happiness campaign. What is in the way of accessing intrinsic joy? Well, one thing that is in the way is denial of anguish. One thing that might be in the way at times is toxic positivity, fear that is covered over by a superficial elation. So this is important just to take note of. Worry and anxiety are in the way of accessing intrinsic joy, the need to be perfect and the need for others to be perfect as well. When we feel deprived, it's really hard to access intrinsic joy. Judging the joy of others rather than joining in their joy. I also do want to remind you, maybe most of you are aware of what is called the negativity bias at this point. It was popularized by Rick Hansen, but it's something that scientists have known about for some time. The negativity bias means that the body reacts more intensely to negative stimuli than to equally strong positive ones. The alarm bell of your brain is primed to go negative. As Rick Hansen describes it, the brain is like Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive ones. Joseph Goldstein, maybe you have heard this already, had an observation that he could have tons and tons of positive reviews of his book, which he does. One negative one was the one that stuck. You know, one negative review was the one that he would carry around with him and react to. So being aware of this is important. We need permission as a Sangha to grieve. We need permission as a Sangha to be angry at injustice and to be afraid. As women, we need the room not to have to be cheerful when we're not. Not to have to be cheerful or to appear to be cheerful when we're not. We also need permission to be joyful, and we need one another to rely on joy, to remember the lovely, to remember the beautiful. This is not a pretense. It is not avoidance of sorrow and grief. It is the awareness that sorrow and grief, suffering and pain are not the entire picture, are not all of what is, and is not the end of the story. Suffering and heartbreak are true, but don't live on their own. There is so much more to the journey, to the path. Beauty, the lovely, transformation, revelation, the unexpected, the unknown, as of yet. I want to end with something by Aurora Levins Morales. Joy is to mood as stars are to the weather, a constant to steer by, sometimes hidden by storm clouds, but high above them, untouched by wind or rain. This is not to say that the weather of the world isn't violent, drenching, harsh. We could spin forever from emergency to emergency, shouting to each new crime, but that would be by steering, by chasing clouds. If we are to live audaciously, we need to step into the calm eye of the storm and steer by the stars, to imagine in rich detail the biggest, most satisfying, inclusive future that we can, a great flowering of human potential and well-being. Project our hearts and minds into that future, and then spend our lives walking toward it. And each time the weather buffets us, wait for a glimpse of sky. Find that bright point of light and adjust our course. Don't waver. Don't let despair sink its sharp teeth into the throat with which you sing. Escalate your dreams. Make them burn so fiercely that you can follow them down any dark alleyway of history and not lose your way. Make them burn clear as a starry drinking gourd over the grim fog of exhaustion, and keep walking. Keep walking. Stay on the path, on the sweet joy of the way. Let's take a moment and sit together. I want to end with kind of an adorable little poem called A Little Stone in the Middle of the Road in Florida by Muriel Rykesser. My son, as a child, saying, God, is anything, even a little stone in the middle of the road in Florida? Yesterday, Nancy, my friend, after long illness, you know what can lift me up, take me right out of despair? No. What? Anything. May all beings rest within the heart of goodness. May all beings live within the heart of mystery. May all beings know intrinsic joy within the heart. See you back for the chanting at 9:15.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.